Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/BehindTheRacketPod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now,
this is a real treat for Noah, especially because this is somebody who goes way back in Noah's life. And I've always just kind of heard tell of these stories of Noah's relationship with Taylor Townsend. And I'm just so honored that you're joining us. Thank you so much. And I know we were just talking before we started recording here, but tell people how you're doing, just how your life is right now and what adjustments you've been making over the last several months.
Yeah, everything's good so far. It's been pretty crazy the last couple of months. Everything was going great at the beginning. It's still going great. I can't say that's not going great. But, you know, I just had some, like, personal internal things that I was dealing with that I kind of had to work through. And I didn't really know exactly what was going on with me. But once I kind of figured it out and identified it, and I went on vacation for the first time, and I took that time to kind of like just unwind. And that was my first time being away from the baby. So it was hard, but it was an opportunity for me to kind of just clear my head and kind of get refocused. And now I'm good. I'm in a great headspace and on the right path. So I can't complain.
I have to ask, like, what is the initial thought? You have a child in your hands. Like, what is the initial mindset switch that happens?
At the beginning?
Yeah. The first thing.
Man. Well, like, he came 2 weeks early. So, like, everything that I thought I was going to do, like, I wasn't able to, like, I had nails this long when I went to the hospital. So I was like, oh my God, I hope I don't like scratch them and like peel the skin off. Like, I'm so scared. But yeah, so it was honestly crazy. Like, I had to have a C-section. So like, I literally couldn't feel anything from my chest down. So like, it was really like, even breathing was kind of weird because your lung, like everything just feels so heavy, but like, I literally had no sensation from like basically here down. So like, I didn't feel or know like when he was out until like he showed me like over the thing, like, here you go. I was like, oh, like I started crying. I was like, oh my God, like, it's real. That's what my thought process was like.
It's real.
Yeah, like, it was different because like towards the end of my pregnancy, like, I had a great pregnancy. I worked out up until 36 weeks, like went to the gym every day, but like I just was over it by like, after like, I had probably 5 or 6 weeks left, and I was just like, I'm sick of this shit. Like, I'm over it. So I think like when he initially like was there, I was like, oh my God, like, this is a real like thing. It just came out and it's like, oh my God. Yes. But it's really strange because like all of the things just started to like kick in. Like, I didn't even think about it. Like, just how to hold the baby and like everything just kind of like came naturally. And then you have a lot of people at the hospital to help you out. Like, if you don't know what to do, then you have people to show you like, okay, this is how you're supposed to do it. But for me, it was pretty easy.
Yeah. After taking care of me for so many years, you know.
Yeah, that's like a group community thing, because all of us have to do it though, Noah.
Wait, Mike, before you get into it. So I'm cleaning out my house here. And of course, Melanie makes books of all my trips when I was younger. Of course, photo books. And this book that I just saw, Couple Blanc. And here I have, it's little Daniel Kurzerman, little Noah Rubin, and then Taylor Townsend is 4, 5, 6 inches taller than us. And we're just like little boys. And Brooke Austin was there, and it was hysterical. You have to see what we look like. I have to send you one of these.
Oh my gosh, I remember that.
For people that don't know the tournament, it was basically our first international experience. I mean, that was Montreal.
We were like 11.
Yeah, we were 11, and it was away from our parents. This was like our first experience. We had no idea what was happening. Absolutely no idea. We're like going to Disney, and here we are, and that's where our journey began. Yeah,
it's crazy. I've known you for 14 years. Like, it's weird to say.
That's so embarrassing for you. That's not
what. So this is me asking, what was he as annoying and just that little shit when he was 11 as he is now, Taylor?
Yeah, definitely.
Probably had less of a filter back then than I do now. I was like,
he was just
okay
hairy
to
too.
Oh,
he was just as hairy.
Come on, I didn't know what a shaver was. Well, what was a trimmer? No, as my bar mitzvah hit, full beard. Full beard, full leg hair, and now it's a Monday routine. It's a Monday trend.
Oh my gosh.
And then La Petite Us. And that was our second large trip. That was going to Tarbes, France. Oh my gosh.
I was just talking about that to someone. So I was telling them, I was like, we were in somewhere in the mountains in France. It was so damn cold. Because I was telling them like the differences between like when you go to Europe and it's summertime and when you go like in the wintertime. So like, you've been to Wimbledon when it's like one of those random hot days, but they have no air. So you have to open up the windows. It's hot as hell all the time. Yeah. You sleep, it's hot as hell. You're sweating. Like, it's just like, it's so annoying. And then you have the polar opposite where it's like, it's freezing. You have to sleep in like your jackets and all your clothes. It's so cold. They have no heat.
Unbelievable. The secondary site was like, it could have been below 32 degrees, 100%. It was so cold.
Freezing, and sharing the room with Gabby and Brooke, and who was there? It was you and
Paul and Wirschlum and Eric. Yeah, that was.
I was like, movie. I've been babysitting you and Tommy and Francis for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, Tommy at that point, that was like my first interaction. I was like, this needs to be put in a cage.
Again, still my reaction to Tommy Paul now. I mean, it's just like.
Still, oh my God. All he would do every night was just throw quarters at the wall, and I'm just like, Taylor, help me, Taylor, help
me. His sister Jessie, because I played in the Southern tournaments with his sister Jessie, and I played against her quite a bit, and she was just like, please watch him for me. I was like, okay, so I felt like I had an obligation to like make sure that he was like, all right.
And then we have Stefan Kozlov doing some weird arm stuff in the back. He had tics with cracking his body, and we'd just be at dinner and silent. And he's just looking, and he's like...
Okay, but here's what I want to ask as the non-tennis player, because you've just rattled off, like, Taylor, we're talking about three people, Tommy, Kaz, and Noah. And, like, he's describing himself and those other two, and I'm just like, you guys, none of you have changed. Like, it's like, what is this maturity, like... Does it just like stop at like 12?
Probably for guys it does.
I mean, Taylor and I hit it off pretty early on, and that's kind of my first experience with Kathy Rinaldi at that time as well. And she just scaring the shit out of me at random moments. And then by mistake, we were hitting cross courts. Where was this? This was like, I don't even know, junior ITF somewhere. And I remember we were hitting cross court and I pegged you by mistake. And then Kathy ran from the other court as a joke, but you never know when she's joking. I was like freaking out because I was like, I'm so sorry, Taylor, I just pegged you. And then Kathy's like, you gotta be fucking kidding me, you're gonna get and this was our juniors, like from 11 all the way through. This was it. We had such a good group of people.
Yeah,
and we lost a few along the way, and it kind of weeded out a little bit, but God, look how, and now we're talking about you having a child and coming back to tennis and.
Jeez, I know, it's crazy. I would have never thought, not me, maybe you, because you've always been the lover guy, like in love with every girl that he dates. I would have never thought it was me. Not me first.
Oh God. Oh, and I just told my girlfriend Jamie about, remember Petra from La Petite Os? Do you remember this story?
the girl who was at the was at the player party.
Yeah, she
was like the Danish neighborhood or something. Cougar.
No, not her.
Oh.
You have to. Oh my god, I can't wait until my grandmother listens to this.
So we'll keep that out.
Well, just for this is for the fandom side. Like, people want to know where you're at with the tennis side, and obviously the motherhood side is so much more important. I can speak to that myself. But where are you at with your tennis? Where are you at in terms of getting back to play? And do you actually miss it at this point?
Oh my god, I miss it so much, and it's been because I've never had an injury to take me out or to like force me, you know, thankfully that I haven't had to play or practice. And so this is the first time that I've been away from the game for this long. And like when I used to play, like I did not watch tennis. I was just like, I just can't, like I need to disconnect. But now that's all I watch. Like I miss being out there. Like I miss competing. I don't necessarily miss the travel so much, but you know, like I just miss that, like that edge and that competition and like that push and pull. That's one of my children. This is the dog. But yeah, so I'm on my comeback trail. I'm on week three of a pretty intense like fitness program. In about 2 weeks, I'm starting to go back to hitting and stuff like that and kind of organized practices and everything, which has been great. I've been hitting off and on with my sister. Like when we get a chance, we go to a little rinky-dink park and hit and stuff like that. But like actually in a couple of weeks, having like organized practices, live ball hitting and you know, ball machines and just getting back to like high levels of repetition. So I'm really excited about that because just being able to kind of like start from the ground up. So yeah, I mean I tried to play World Team Tennis in November, but nobody really wants me, so so I was like okay, because I was like even if I play doubles, like I just wanted to get a chance to like be out there and feel where I'm at. But my plan is to be back playing tournaments between March and May of next year. Okay. So just depending on how everything progresses, you know, maybe play, you know, a UTR or something like that.
Yeah,
but we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I'm definitely coming back. I'm definitely on the path. It's just, you know, a long way to go.
in that regard, have you matured? Do you sense that like a different perspective on where you're at in terms of the tennis side, let alone obviously the personality side?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think that this whole experience has, like I said, being away from the game has helped me mature as a player. I think mentally, even though I haven't like hit a lot of balls or played any matches in you know, September will be a year, like US Open will be a year.
Yeah.
But even though I haven't played any competitive matches, I feel like me being away from the sport has allowed me to like take a step back and really like analyze and be able to see and watch objectively.
Yeah.
And kind of just start seeing like, okay, this is what I would do, or trying to figure out what I would do in these scenarios and just kind of like keep my mind engaged.
Yeah.
But I think this whole experience also has given me a different perspective of like what's important. Like I feel like tennis players get caught up, or athletes in general, it's very easy for like to get caught up in results, and like if you're not doing well, you don't feel good, like, you know, and you feel like this match and you have to win your first round of a Grand Slam and, you know, all of these different things, and tennis is designed for you to always have to top what you did the following year in order for you to stay in the spot that you're at.
Right.
So it creates this like unique pressure because you have to continue to like one up yourself basically and the people around you. So it definitely has given me a perspective of what's important, and just like, you know, it's at the end of the day, like I'm blessed to be able to play a game that I love and make money. And just, you know, going out there with like a new drive and a new fire, honestly, and a new motivation of like, now I'm just doing, it's bigger than just me now. Like, it's not just about, I want to win this match because of me. Like I'm I need to win this match because, you know, my son is, you know, I got my son.
Yeah.
You know, I have someone else to provide for other than myself. And I think that that driving factor, you know, kind of brings something out of you that is unique, you know, until you get in that place.
That was actually going to be my next question, the both sides, the pressures and the motivations of having like somebody to support and somebody next to you, like through this, you know, what does that feel like on a day-to-day basis? Obviously you're not picking up a racket necessarily right now, but are you thinking about that when you wake up?
Yeah.
Is that like a constant yes. reminder? Like I am now, I have to, you know, I have to do this yeah. or, okay, that's.
I literally like check my bank account every day. I'm like, oh my God. Like, he's going down.
You better get a scholarship.
Well, Noah will get you some stock tips. So that's not a problem. He's got inside information. It's good.
Yeah, I'm a big
totally legal too. Yeah.
No, all actually nothing's legal. I do absolutely nothing legally.
Oh my God. Yeah, but I mean, it's something that you like, it's inevitable, honestly. Like that understanding and knowing that, okay, I have another person that is relying on me for everything. And like over the last couple of months and him growing, like it's been bodily, you know, breastfeeding, and like I'm the only source of his food, you know, like this is the only thing that you get it from me. So it's like everything is exclusively like, you know, I need you, you know. And my boyfriend is great. He's an amazing dad. And but it's like that's always on my mind, because even for me, like I've been through struggles like financially and everything before having him, and I just was like, you know, I never want to get to this place again, like ever. So, you know, that's always something where it's like you have that pressure of feeling like, okay, now, you know, I have to make something happen. And I feel like it you got to kind of find that balance. And I think that once I go back to start competing and stuff, like I think that my true colors will kind of come out of like where my mind is. But you got to find that balance between like motivating yourself and then putting like crazy pressure on yourself and, you know, feeling like you're going to go crazy because, you know, you're counting every dollar, or feeling like, okay, I can't lose. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like you kind of have to find that balance. Well, I have to find that balance. So I'm excited just to start competing and get back, because I think that a lot of these things that we're talking about are just going to kind of come out naturally. So yeah, we'll see.
It's an interesting discussion, obviously, with Naomi and what she's brought to the table of late, and obviously Simone Biles as well. And obviously your article in the Players Tribune a couple months ago, I was actually reading it, and then Christopher Eubanks shows up like, oh, that's not,
sorry.
No, that's good. And I'm reading it, and then Christopher Eubanks like comes up right behind me. We were in Orlando, and he's just like, are you reading this Taylor Townsend article? I mean, yeah. But it's, so much of the discussion right now is about mental health and how athletes are competing and dealing with that side. And I guess that's the real question, isn't it? How what is your perspective on Naomi, Simone, what they've said, what they've gone through? And on top of it, you know, you dealt with that, gosh, what is it, 7-8 years ago now, even longer, and how you went through that and your perspective on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that during those times, like when I was going through those hardships, mental health wasn't high on the priority list for anybody.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was a topic of discussion for athletes. And honestly, like back then, I didn't even think about mental health anything. I was just like, well, shit. You know, like I wasn't thinking about like, oh, my emotions and my mind and I have anxiety. Like I was like, I don't, like, you got to keep going, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's a thing where it's kind of like you have to put your emotions to the side and just like keep on keeping on. And I think like for me, I felt like that's has helped me, because it has created like kind of me to have tough skin and to have resilience to not kind of stay in what you're going through. But it's a twofold, because if you don't acknowledge it, then it continues to come back. So like with Naomi, obviously she was going through certain things and mentally wasn't in a good headspace. So she decided I need to take time away. and deal with whatever was going on so that I can come back and I can feel good and I can feel refreshed and rejuvenated. And the same thing like Simone Biles did, like, she's like, okay, I'm not in a good headspace. So let me kind of take myself out of here until I'm in a good space to be able to compete. But for me, it's twofold, because as athletes, we have to deal with pressures all the time. And pressure is part of the game. Like, it's just is what it is. Expectation, especially when you're at the top of your at the top of the game and you're like the face of the sport, whether that's tennis, basketball, anything, it comes with tons of obligations and it comes with a lot of pressures, both positive and negative. So for me, like, I understand where they're coming from, but from my experiences of having to just deal with the stuff as I'm continuing with my competition and practicing and trying to just get myself through it. Like, for me and my experiences, I don't necessarily agree with like the logic of saying, hey, like, let me just withdraw like in the middle of the competition. Like, and I always said, I was like, if you weren't in the position where you are in now, where you've succeeded and you have these successes and these accomplishments, and you were in the place where you were grinding and scratching and clawing, trying to get to where you are now, would you have ever like been like, no, I'm not going to do this? Probably not. You know what I mean? So you kind of have to have that mentality of like, I'm always grinding and I'm always working. And that's just how I am. Like, even Michael Phelps, he talks about his anxiety and everything after, but even if he was feeling those pressures, he still was able to compartmentalize that stuff and go and like kick ass. And then it opens up the conversation of like, yeah, I wasn't in a good space mentally, but I was able to still succeed because I, you know, this is how I approached it. So like, I understand both sides, but personally, like, I would like to see people not be so sensitive and like, you know, kind of like, oh, you know, it's okay. Like, you know, being a professional athlete comes with a lot of responsibilities on both sides. Noah, you get it. Like, you got press, you got this, you got, you know, recovery. You have all these things that you have to do for yourself and other people. And it just is part of the game. So you just got to learn how to play the game to where you can balance it for you.
No, there's really no right answer, because, you know, it can get worse, you know, or you're in it and then you lose. You know, there's really goes a few different ways. But for you, it's kind of an interesting time, because you're just told us you're one of those that's going to fight through. This is a time off right now. Obviously, it's extremely exhausting and time consuming, and every second is taken by somebody else.
Yeah.
But is this a time for you to work on some of that, or give yourself a mental break in some of the categories that you've dealt with for so many years? Is this an okay time to step away?
Yeah,
it kind of forced it upon you almost.
Yeah. But last year, even before, and I mean, I can speak to this, even before like I got pregnant or knew I was pregnant, let's just say, because this wasn't on purpose, trust me. But even before, like, when the pandemic had first started, and like they had pretty much, it was like right after they had canceled Wimbledon. So I was like, okay, I know there's not going to be anything like from July. Like, yeah, it was kind of inevitable of like what our schedule was going to look like and everything. And I started like really struggling mentally, because like not necessarily with motivation, because like when I would show up to fitness or when I would show up to practice, it wouldn't be my effort level. But it was finding the inner motivation to continue every single day when I don't know what I'm working for. You know what I mean? Like, you, when you have off season, you work really hard because it's like, okay, I'm going to Australia. Right. I know that it starts this day and it ends this day, because when my travel day is here, you know, the tournament starts here. So it's like you have these definite dates where you can kind of pinpoint and you know, okay, I'm working towards this particular thing. But when the pandemic hit, it was like, I don't know what I'm gonna play, everything is shutting down. Yeah. Like, what is my life outside of tennis and traveling and everything? And it kind of exposed that for me. I was like, wow, like, I don't have shit to do. I don't know what I like to do. I don't know anything outside of this game and this regimen and routine. So I started seeing like a sports psychologist because I was like, if I can't play matches and everything like that, like at least let me try to work on my mind. So I started seeing someone and just kind of like started shaving the layers of like certain issues that I have, the things that I've gone through in the past and kind of how they affected me back then, now, my habits and all that stuff. So yeah, even before like getting pregnant, I had started on that journey of trying to kind of understand myself and the things that I've gone through and how they're affecting me. So I definitely think time away is important and how you plan, but you kind of have to be aware of like where you are in your headspace. So I get both, like I said, I get both sides, but like that was a time when we were forced to take time off. So that was like my way of trying to maximize, you know, us. Okay, we're not playing tournament, so let me try to do something that could help me once I do go back on court.
I'm fascinated to see what that development is going to look like for you, because I always thought you were so incredibly tough as it was, you know, from my external viewpoint, you seemed just so tough. Can I ask about one specific incident that you talked about in the Players Tribune, the little Mo tournament? So that was the one I like I told you earlier, I have a 7-year-old daughter, right? So this is the same time frame. Is that right? You were seven. Yeah. Is that right? And so you finished second in that tournament, and then your coach at the time, Donald Young Sr., told Donald Jr., the DY that everybody knows, to go out to the parking lot and break your second place trophy.
Mm-hmm.
So me, as a parent of a 6-year-old who's not at the time, who is not obviously an athlete at the same level you are by any means, but for me, I immediately just tensed up and I was just like, what? Don't you do that to my little girl, even though it's you, right? I'm just like, oh my God, what? No, why? And I guess, can you kind of explain that? Because you used it as a positive thing. And for me, as a parent, I was furious. So I guess I had trouble understanding that reaction. And I was hoping you could kind of explain it to me, just a regular person.
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of the precursor is that, like Mr. Young and like Donald's like my brother,
right?
Miss Young, like they've been in my life since before I was thought about. Like, so Donald's always been around. He's always been a jerk to us. Like, it was just his thing. But my coaches were always like really tough on us of like, and that's kind of like even the mindset that I've taken in my comeback is like, I'm not going to show up. I'm not coming here just to participate. I'm not going somewhere to be a participant. I'm not going to be happy just being here. Like, I'm going to be here and I'm coming here to win and succeed. So for me, Mr. Young's basically thought process was like, there was no reason that you should have lost this match, like zero. And it's unacceptable for you to be happy and content with second place when you should have been in first place. Like, there's no reason. Like, you are beating the girl and you were just happy about the trophy and, you know, all of that. So it was kind of a deeper message. It wasn't necessarily about the physical thing, but it was just like, no, like it was kind of that breaking of the trophy is like shattering your kind of complacency. You know what I mean? Like, you can't be complacent and you can't be happy with second place because you're better than that. And like, I expect more from you and you have to expect more from yourself. So like, looking back, that's the message and that's the positive that I took from it. Like, I was devastated at the time. I was like, you're so evil. but like, looking back on it, like, I appreciate the lesson because now I'm older and like, I can look at that and I can say, okay, I see what you were trying to do. And like I said, I'm applying that same logic even to my comeback. Like, I've given myself 12 to 14 months because I didn't want to rush and I didn't want to return to the court if I didn't feel like I can play and win. Like, I'm not just going to go and play WTAs because I have a protected ranking and because I can. No, I'm going to go when I'm ready and when I know that I can win matches and I'm in a good space. So that was kind of like even that message and that lesson tied into even how I'm doing things now, like just kind of little things in my head. I guess I'm still scarred.
I'm scarred right now. Yeah.
Yeah, my heart rate's at 150. The incident was 20 years ago, and it wasn't about me. My dad was tough, but I'm still a Long Island Jew. I was just kind of chilling over here, you know. I was just doing my thing, and we kept our trophies. They're still in my garage in Maryland.
Exactly. I still have a lot of them, but that
I have a fourth
one...
place trophy somewhere down there, so
yeah. That was just that was his way.
Taylor,
like, whatever.
Who have you reached out to, or who has reached out to you in terms of the moms that are on tour, in terms of just kind of giving you an idea of the path and the journey and what that's like?
I've talked to pretty much, well, I'm not going to say all of them. I talked to Kim Kleister, Serena, and I've talked to Vika.
Okay.
Those are the three ones that I've kind of spoken to the most. And they've just been really like open. It was more so, I haven't really spoken to him in a while, like since I've had the baby. I spoke to Kim, like she messaged me and just asked, like, you know, how are you doing? But more so just like expressing, oh, I'm really excited for you. This is awesome. Congratulations. You know, that kind of stuff. And, I saw Serena last November and we just kind of talked and just comparing our experiences of like, obviously when she was pregnant, she was like the same. She was like 3 months when she won in 2017 in Australia.
Right.
And so like, obviously having, you know, played the US Open and having to keep that a secret and all this stuff, I was like, it was so super stressful. And she was like, you're pregnant? Like, I didn't even know. And I was like, yeah, I was trying to hide. Like, I was wearing like shirts that were huge and just like, I was super self-conscious. Like, it was so weird. And it was a thing where it's like, you know, the bubble, everybody's condensed in a small space. So you see everybody all the time. Like, it wasn't like you can escape where you go to your hotel, I go to mine. Like maybe people, players aren't staying at the hotel, so you can kind of have your own, you know, be free. No, not at all. So, they've been incredibly supportive. And, you know, hopefully when I return back on tour and kind of like start getting my feet grounded in traveling and everything, like obviously traveling with a child is not easy at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, as they get older, you know, hopefully it works out. I don't know. It's like, it's a learning experience for me at this point. So I'm like, everything is new. Like me having one play as a mother is number one. Number two, now factoring in my scheduling and having a child and figuring out, okay, how long am I going to be away from home? When is he going to come on the road? Like I literally went and picked up his passport today. You need a passport because if I got to go somewhere, like you need to come to, you know what I mean? So like all of these things are super new to me, especially when I go back, like just having to factor in all these things, whereas you can focus singularly before. It's just me and my team and my coach and I just got to do for me. Okay, I need to recover. I need to warm up. I need to do this. Now it's someone else and other people and other branches that you kind of got to pull from. So yeah, we're all going to be in this together, honestly.
Well, I guess the real question is, what age am I allowed to babysit? Hmm. When does that...
Oh, God, I almost choked.
You okay with that?
I trust Noah, honestly. So he's very responsible.
Oh, my God.
Like, I do.
Wait, guys, everybody. What? What happened?
I do. I trust you.
Oh, my God.
This might be the most complimentary thing that's ever been said about Noah in the two years we've done this podcast.
I do. As long as Jamie's around.
Taylor, I'll say this. He came last year in the middle of the pandemic and he and my daughter Marnie, they hit it off and she still wants to talk to him every once in a while. So I give him shit, but I am completely with you. I know he would.
Yes.
If you can also, you need to take away his phone for a little bit. I mean, that's pretty crucial. If you can do that, yeah. I think he'd be great.
Well, no, yeah, we're making this child Instagram fame. You have to understand, this is step one. You start the content. I'm helping out. This is it. This is our ticket.
But I have like a lot of people. So it's like, if I have to play like first matchup, I'll be like, okay, your third match. All right, you take him. This is first shift, second shift, third shift. The ladies in the locker room were like, just leave him in here with us. We'll be fine. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay. So we'll see how it goes. It's definitely interesting though.
I'll buy a leash. Not to worry.
Oh my God.
You better not. I will chop off your crooked pinky finger.
Wow. That shows the knowledge of Noah Rubin.
That's just like, the good old high four.
High four.
Taylor, what's your caffeine of choice?
Oh man.
You gotta have. I mean, listen. This is where my coffee addiction started. Was 7 years ago.
Mm-mm. I honestly don't own a coffee machine because I don't want to get addicted. So I just drink. I drink like powdered moringa in the morning.
Okay.
That gives me energy, and that's pretty much it. Like I really try to stay away from like. I mean, I love a good coffee and a pastry.
Yes.
Oh, and I got addicted to coffee in Australia.
Yes. Yes.
Like that's when I actually got it. When I was there for how many weeks was I there? I think I was there for seven or 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And it was like, my progression was, oh, I'd like a coffee to like, oh, like I'm feeling, oh, I need a coffee. See, I'm tired. Yes, to like, right. Oh, a coffee at lunch would be great. To like, I need two or three a day.
Yep.
And then I got home and I was like, damn, I need a coffee. So I woke up at like 4 a.m. and I was like, uh-huh. So I was like, oh my God. So I literally, this place like that was up the street from my house that I thought had good coffee. Cause I like Starbucks and those kind of things. Like once you have the stuff over in Europe and Australia, like when you come back to the States, like you have to search for like good coffee. And when I came back, I was like, oh my God, I need a coffee. So I woke up, got dressed and was like, standing outside of this restaurant for 30 minutes until they opened. Like I was the first one in the door. Like I need a cappuccino like now.
I respect this so much.
Yeah. Once I went through that and I was like having my look, I was there by myself. I was like, okay, this is a little ridiculous. You gotta cut yourself off. So after that, I was like, all right. So I love a good coffee, but I just don't, I'm not an avid coffee drinker. Cause like, I just don't want to get addicted to it.
God, I understand. Let me
Mike
just,
is long gone.
Let's just say this. Before Noah came along and was just like, I've got this behind the racket thing that I want to do. And can we do a podcast together? My previous podcast was called The Coffee Cast, where I would get a tennis player and we'd go to a coffee shop and just shoot the shit over coffee or like over a good coffee. It. Right.
Yes.
That was when it was fun. And then this little fella shows up and he's just like, I want a little thing.
Well, I might be coming to New York, so hopefully we can get a good coffee.
Okay. Now we're talking.
I know what this is.
Yes. Well, Noah's like the food and drink. He's so bougie, like I just can't. My pocketbook, I'm not going to keep up with him. Like, I just can't.
Taylor, you and I could tell some stories right now. Oh, Lord.
Way too bougie for me.
I mean, I don't even have a checking account anymore, so I don't even they just took it away from me. They're like, you don't use this, so we're going to take this back now. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Taylor, this was a lot of fun. We missed I missed you. I know Mike missed you without even knowing you.
No, I've admired your spirit. I've admired your hands. Oh, my God, what I would do for your hands. I'm excited to be able to see you out on court again. But yeah, if we're in New York, I'd love to be able to actually chat in person. That would be a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, for sure. Noah, do you want to see the baby?
Yes.
Okay, hold on.
Gotta wait for that.
I'm going to just bet Aiden is bigger than you already.
I actually thought you were going to say something nice. I was like, what are you? Yeah. Okay, Mike.
My daughter, by the way, came in and interrupted the podcast because you texted me and she said, Noah Rubin was on my iPad. Oh, my God.
Yeah, hi, Noah.
Hi.
What did we just interrupt? What was he doing?
He was asleep. Well, not really. He's taking. So his can you move?
That was to the dog, for people who are just listening. That was to the dog, not yeah. to Aiden.
Oh, my gosh. So his nickname is Catnap Man, because all he does is take catnaps. Like, he doesn't nap during the day. So, yeah, that's all he does is just, like, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. So it's a tease. So it's like you think that you can get a good nap in, and you, as soon as you start falling asleep, he's up. So that's his nickname. So he just took a cat nap. Say hi, Noah. Oh, my God.
Look at him. With your Dobermans. I love it.
With those cheeks. Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I was going to say those cheeks are exploding.
Yes. He's got a lot of juice, and I love the juice. Can you?
How old officially right now?
He's 4 months, turning 5 months on the 14th. It's in a couple of days.
I mean, I like shopping, believe me, but there is nothing like buying baby clothes. I know they grow out of it within like a day and a half, but it's just, you see this little fucking shoe.
Yes, it's like the socks are like this big.
Oh my God.
It's so cute. Like I was cleaning my closet out and I found like one of his diapers from like when he was in the hospital, like the newborn diapers.
Yep.
And it was so small. I was like, oh my God, yeah. So cute. Yeah, but I was just like, I just refused because I'm a sneakerhead. Like me and my boyfriend are both like, we love sneakers. And I was like, I just can't wait to start like swagging him out. But I was just like, I'm just not going to do it right now because you're going to grow too fast.
Yeah, you just can't.
There's a store in Miami. It has like the little Jordans with the Moncler jackets. And I'm like, you got to buy all of it. You have to buy all of it.
Your
Uncle Noah's going to buy you a Moncler jacket.
You have to ask. Like, I wasn't. Jamie has a nephew. And the first thing, I just bought bathing suits, these Villebrequin bathing suits. And it was a matching one with the fall. You have to. You just have to. And
you're
to
so cut you off, bougie.
No, to cut Mike off, he was going to say, I wear the same shoes I did as your son. So you can't make those jokes. They're gone already. Sorry. I get it. My shoe size has not grown. I get it. Okay. I have a dinner now. I have to go to dinner. I don't want to speak to you anymore, Mike, but I do miss you, Taylor. And I'm happy to see this little cutie. Look at him.
Thank you. I miss you guys too. And I'll message you when I get, well, if and when I get to New York and we can meet up. Just for casual
that sounds good.
Something.
That sounds really good. Well, thank you so much and best of luck. We are here if you need anything and get some rest, okay?
Yeah, thank you guys. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye, Taylor.
See you, Taylor.
All
right. Bye.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.